Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike DeTellier along with Cullen Steele, holding everything in line behind the scenes here in studio. We'll have Steve Geller join us at 5:45 for our triple option feature. If you were looking for good news, this ain't it. But no surprise, Chris Olave was ruled out for Thursday's game against the Broncos. Same situation with Patrick Surtain. Got concussion issues, short week. It's rare, and I mean rare, that you get a guy back. But even worse news today, Rashid Shaheed will undergo meniscus surgery Thursday, exploratory to determine the extent of the meniscus injury. And if it's just a little nip or a cut, he'll be out a few weeks. But if it's a total repair, he's out for the rest of the season. We'll have Dr. David Elias from Ortho LA join us in between the 4:35-4:40 hour to talk about the surgery itself. But if that is repair, then Shaheed will be out the rest of the 2024 season. So now you got to count on Cedric Wilson, Bub Means. Both those guys have fought injuries. Also, Equanimeous St. Brown. Most likely, you bring up Kevin Austin, who was on the practice squad. He was a guy they picked up late in the training camp period. He had played in the UFL, former Notre Dame wideout, who has been on the practice squad. They did just recently sign former San Francisco 49er 2018 second-round pick Dante Pettis. That'd be short in a week that you're playing tomorrow that you're elevating, but you might have to. Your receiving core has basically kind of been wiped out. Your two starters here with Rashid Shaheed, who will miss the game Thursday. Chris Olave will miss the game Thursday. But the big news is the extent of the surgery for Shaheed. And, again, we'll find out a lot more Thursday. And also at 4:35, Dr. David Elias will be on with us to tell us the whole extent of that type exploratory surgery to see if it's a short-term 2 to 3 week injury repair, and that's basically just sort of a nip or a little cut off of the meniscus or total repair. We come back here on Sports Talk. We'll have on with us Glenn West from Go247 to talk LSU Tigers. Maybe he's got better news for us right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTellier along with Cullen Steele in studio. Let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. We'll have on with us the senior writer from Go247 covering the LSU Fighting Tigers, Glenn West. Glenn, thanks so much for joining us. I hope you got better news than what I just gave on the Saints injury list. And I don't know what it is with LSU and Saints, but man, they've had receivers going down left and right. So give me some good news on LSU's receiving core.
Yeah, I kind of half thought about driving down to New Orleans and knocking on the practice facility for a open tryout if they were having them down there.
Well, I couldn't miss you if I threw it to you. I might be short, but I wouldn't overthrow you.
Yeah, that's the line of thinking I was going with there. But, yeah, look, I mean, LSU, I think from an injury perspective, they're on the up and up. They're on the upswing there. Looks like C.J. Daniels is going to play for him this week at Arkansas. Chris Hilton is questionable, but things are still progressing in a positive way. There have been no setbacks there. But I think we've also gotten to the point with Chris, unfortunately, it's just you'll believe it when you see it and when he's out there. So hopefully that's sooner than later. But they'll have CJ back out there, and that's kind of the big one that they were missing last week against Ole Miss, but they'll get him back in the fold, and we'll see if they can kind of mix things up from a passing game perspective. I mean, the big kind of revelation earlier this week from Brian Kelly was that freshman tight end Tre'Davious Green is going to be used as more of a receiver here going forward, so that's obviously another big-time passing weapon here for Nussmeier as they kind of move forward with the second half of their schedule.
Glenda, I look at it this way. You sort of used him as a receiver before. You're just flanking him out a little bit longer. Come on, he ain't throwing no inline blocks. He's a flex tight end. And so I think that transition is going to be pretty smooth for Tre'Davious. And just he gives you that big body guy downfield, especially in short yardage red zone where, you got a mismatch downfield trying to cover a 6'7" guy.
Yeah, look, I mean, he has three catches this year, and two of them have been for touchdowns down in the red zone. So I think that gives you a pretty good indication of how they ideally want to use him. I think he's going to be a guy that you see in those short yardage red zone situations where they either want to go score or they want to get a first down or keep moving the chains, whatever it is that they're trying to look for on a play. And I think you can split him out to the slot. I think you can even, you know, really test him out wide too and see if you can't go up and make a contested jump ball on a flare route or something. I mean, he's just got such a wide, you know, wingspan, and just the point of attack with the ball is just it would be hard for Nussmeier to miss him. Let's just put it that way. So I think he's going to be a valuable tool for LSU as they kind of move forward here. But again, you know, he's somebody that hasn't caught a whole ton of passes yet. He's still relatively new to the game as a whole. So there's probably going to be a little bit of a learning curve there as well. So we'll see exactly how many snaps he's out on the field for this weekend. But it is nice to see that LSU wants to get him on the field more. They want to utilize his skill set, which is being a big-bodied receiver, somebody that can go up and catch a pass. And I think he could make a few more plays for you here down the stretch when you need him most.
Glenn, the revelation on the field has been over the past couple of weeks, we've seen steady progress on the defensive side of the football. And you can point toward two dudes, Whit Weeks at linebacker and Braden Swenson coming off the edge. So kind of give us a little thought pattern on that. You know, a lot of people last year, I know, man, they were calling the shows and my eyes weren't deceiving me. Every time Whit Weeks was on the field, he was making plays and you wanted to see more of him. Swenson's been more of the revelation that, okay, he started at Oregon. We didn't see this type of production from him. And now you see the maturity. And I notice it's his ability to attack a blocker and then counter check him a little bit. He's got a couple of moves now. He was just a speed guy before. I'm going to beat you off the edge with my speed. And he can still do that, but he's got a move or two in the bag that he uses today that he didn't have a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you mention him and you bring up the fact that he's been more of a speed guy in his past. I mean, one of the things that he talked with us about, and we got a chance to spend some time with him yesterday, he just talked about the different ways that Kevin Peoples has been able to kind of unlock a number of his different pass rush moves that he didn't even know that he had. I mean, he's really gone to work this year, I think, on just diversifying his rush, adding some power to the mix as well. I mean, he's been a really well-versed pass rusher for this team, and they've been lining him up on the edge. They've been bringing him up through the middle sometimes. He's been a very versatile guy for them at that edge rusher spot. And, it's a major credit to him and kind of the way that LSU has used him this year. They've really unlocked something there. And, I mean, he's on pace right now to kind of challenge Arden Key for that number one all-time sacks list in a single season. And if, you know, we'd gone into the season and that would have been the guy that we picked, I don't know what the odds would have been on that, but they probably would have been pretty high on Braden Swenson being the guy that would, you know, potentially have double-digit sacks for LSU this year. So
well, it wouldn't have been Powerball, but it would have been lottery.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. It would have been up there for sure. And so he's done a fantastic job for him. And then you mentioned Whit Weeks there. Obviously, since Harold Perkins went down in particular, LSU has really leaned into those two linebacker sets or schemes with Greg Penn and Whit Weeks kind of manning the middle there. And Whit had just a phenomenal breakout performance here against Ole Miss, 18 tackles, forced fumble, had the big sack there in the fourth quarter to kind of send it to overtime. So he's been, I think, everything LSU was hoping for in terms of his second year development. He's a sideline to sideline guy. He's got great speed. And I think he's somebody that, you know, can run fit well. You know, that's been a little bit of a struggle for him. I think early in the season was just fitting the runs, but that's going to be an area here, especially against Arkansas this weekend, where those two guys, Greg Penn and Whit Weeks, are going to be they're going to need to be on their P's and Q's in that respect. So Weeks has been a really great, you know, kind of breakout candidate. I think he was going into the year, and now, unfortunately, with Perkins being out, you know, you've seen him elevate his game, elevate his role, and really step up when this defense has needed him most.
The other guy, too, on defense would be Zay Alexander. This is less than a year from ACL surgery, and I know that's a pretty extensive surgery when you have that ACL tear and you go in, and normally it's over a year before you can hit back on the field. And to watch him Saturday, and you know he's not close to 100%. He's more in the 75-80 range. But, man, he's a football player, and he has size, matchup ability, and he's got these real long arms that he can knock that ball away. But he plays the ball like a receiver when it's in flight.
Yeah.
I like to see that. He's one of the few guys on LSU at corner. At least he gets his head turned around, and he plays it like a wide receiver. Man, I can't tell you how much respect I have for Zay Alexander to come back from that type injury in less than a year and to be the playmaker he was Saturday night against Ole Miss.
Yeah, I mean, look, he was absolutely critical and a big reason why LSU won that game. I mean, the game ball was given to him afterwards, and you know, Brian Kelly really highlighted his performance, his play, as being a critical reason why LSU won that game. I mean, think about this. He not only was coming off that knee injury, he had a concussion a couple weeks ago, and so he was going through protocol for a week or two. He probably wasn't able to practice as much and, you know, kind of in the weeks leading up to that game. And then on game day, LSU's defense plays 87 snaps, and Zay Alexander is out there for every single one of them. I mean, he was absolute workhorse for them in the secondary against Ole Miss. And yeah, I thought coming into the year, he would be the guy that once they got him healthy and got him rolling, the best version of this secondary would really start to show itself. And, you know, I think that's proven to be true. I think he's somebody that when you have him out there with Ashton Stamps, that's kind of probably your best 1-2 punch at cornerback. I think TJ Woodland, J.K. Johnson, those kind of guys can spell them at times. But I think Stamps and Alexander is a duo that can kind of hold their own here in the SEC. And you know, it's been all three levels of the defense really that have really stepped up in the last couple of games. You'd like to see it translate on the road here against an Arkansas team that is very physical and likes to run the ball and is a pretty balanced attack from an offensive passing and run game perspective. So it's going to be a great challenge for those guys to kind of carry this thing on the road and see if they can't continue to build some momentum here.
Glenn, final question for you. And this is one of these games Saturday. It's a pain in the yuck to be. Because you used to catch Arkansas right after Alabama, okay? And the emotional part of getting up for a big game like that. And then, come on, you're not going to play at that same level emotionally. Now you got up for a big game against Ole Miss, and now you got to travel to Arkansas to play a team that has always been a physical team. You got more talent than they do, but they're physical up front, offensive, defensive lines. They can hit you with the running game. Their passing game is sort of rode the roller coaster, and there's some issues maybe in the secondary for them. But it's one of those games that, you know, that always sort of scares you as a coach. And this is where you got to lean on the leaders of your team to say, hey, look, everything everybody's been telling you on the streets about how great you played Saturday against Ole Miss will go right out the window if you lose Saturday to Arkansas.
Yep, absolutely. That's a great point. That's a great point to bring up there. And we talked with Josh Williams on Tuesday night, and we asked him just kind of what kind of things do you tell the team, the locker room, as a leader of this team, somebody who's played in this game for the last 5 years? And he says he's expecting a dogfight, and he has relayed that message to every single one of the players that he comes across in that locker room. I think what we've learned here about the SEC over the first month, it is very difficult to win on the road. And if you get down by a couple scores on the road, it's almost lights out. And LSU proved a couple weeks ago that they can come back from those kinds of deficits, but it's not the kind of fire you want to be playing with every single week on the road. So this is going to be very important for LSU to kind of flush the emotions of last weekend, move on, regenerate that energy into an opponent like Arkansas that, to your point, is very physical. It seems like they really love playing for Sam Pittman. Sam Pittman, I think coming into this year, there was no coach in the SEC that was on a hotter seat. And here they are, they're sitting at 4-2. I think they're kind of one of the surprises of league play so far. Had a big win a couple weeks ago against Tennessee, and they're riding some momentum right now. So You've got to go in there and treat this thing with the utmost respect and care. And if you can get past these next couple weeks, these A&M and Arkansas games, you have to really like LSU's chances at that point of making a real legit run at this thing and proving that they're contenders and not pretenders.
Glenn, thanks so much for joining us. Every time I see Sam Pittman, I know he's not from the Bayou, but he reminds me of somebody that I grew up with on the Bayou. Man, let's go have a little taste here and there and a click of a beer or two and have a good time and go eat a cheeseburger or two or whatever. He's one of those type of guys, one of those good old
Seems
boys.
Like a good hang.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Seems like a good hang.
And he looked like a storyteller. And that's the other part. If you wanted to hang out, you want somebody to tell you some stories, and Sam Pittman got it. Glenn, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. And at least you gave us some good injury news because we've sure been suffering on that part from the Saints side of the field.
Yeah.
Thanks for
Fingers
your time, Glenn.
They find something. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Glenn. Appreciate it. Glenn West, senior writer for Go247.com, covering the LSU Tigers in a big game this coming Saturday against Arkansas. And you can hear the pregame, Herb Tyler and I, starting at 2 o'clock Saturday right here on the Big 870 WWL from Acme Oyster House. We'll return. We'll have on with us Dr. David Elias from Ortho LA to explain us the meniscus and sort of what goes into this exploratory surgery when you have that type injury right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTiglio along with Cullen Steele handling everything behind the scenes in the news with the Saints. No surprise, Chris Olave out this week along with Broncos cornerback Patrick Surtain, both with concussion issues. But news today breaking I guess mid-afternoon, that Rashid Shaheed will undergo exploratory surgery on his meniscus to find out the extent of the injury, if it's a little nip and a tuck and sort of a cut or total repair. Total repair, and Doc can talk a lot more about it than I can, but I'm pretty sure that would mean the rest of the season. We have on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line from Ortho LA, Dr. David Elias. Doc, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. I didn't think I'd call you back this quick. We talked this morning. I didn't think we'd have that second conversation this afternoon.
Yeah, I jinxed us.
What up? Doc, kind of detail everything about the meniscus itself and if it's a couple weeks surgery, or what would you find in the exploratory surgery to make you go from what would be a short-term recovery time, a couple weeks, to basically, you're talking about months, if you're going to do a repair?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, I would imagine they got an MRI and saw a signal change in one of his meniscus. There's two in each knee, the medial and the lateral meniscus. And it's a common football injury. It can happen acutely with a twisting injury or a hit to the knee. It can happen in combination with other injuries, like an ACL tear. Meniscal tears are common with that. A lot of times they can just be chronic nagging injuries. People don't remember an injury, and, you know, through weeks of having pain and locking and catching, you get an MRI and you see a meniscal tear. For the most part, meniscal tears are 100% operative. There's not really a non-operative way to treat a meniscal tear. And a lot of the reason is the blood supply to the meniscus is pretty poor. So, you know, meniscal surgery is difficult. I mean, I've been doing this 17 years, and still, you know, you go into a knee and never know what to expect. The MRI leads you to hopefully know if you're going to do a repair or a debridement. Also, the age of the patient, the condition of the knee. A lot of factors go into, do you just debride it and it's a quick recovery, or do you actually put stitches and repair it? And then it's a longer recovery. So, you know, the meniscus is divided into zones. The inner zone doesn't have good blood supply. So if you've got a tear in that zone, most of the time it's just a cleanup, a debridement, and, you know, recovery can still be 3 to 6 weeks, depending on, you know, the extent of the surgery. If the tear is on the outside periphery, the blood supply is good. If it's a clean tear, if it involves a lot of the meniscus, then a lot of times you're going to repair it. so that you can preserve the long-term shock-absorbing function of the meniscus. So if he gets a repair, it's season-ending. You're 6 weeks non-weight-bearing. Usually return to play is somewhere between 4 to 6 months. With a debridement, I would guess 4 to 6 weeks. So,
Doc, when you look at it from an MRI situation, you're not going to be able to tell from the MRI. Basically, you got to go in for exploratory surgery to find out the full extent, correct?
Well, again, we don't know his history, right? Has he had two or three knee scopes in the past, even in college and high school? And that changes, too. You know, if this is his third or fourth knee scope, more than likely it's just going to be a cleanup because there's not going to be a whole lot to repair. If, you know, an MRI can lead us, it can help predict if we're going to repair or if we're going to debride. But a lot of times you really don't know till you get in there and you probe the meniscus and you look at the quality of the tissue. You know, you can't put a stitch in a meniscus that is degenerative and has a lot of tears in it because it won't hold. So, you know, in that situation, you just trim out the part that's torn and you know, the goal is always to leave as much meniscus, good meniscus behind so that it can still preserve that shock absorbing function. But, you know, a lot of times you go in there thinking you're going to repair and you end up you're not able to repair it. A lot of times you go in there thinking you're going to just clean it out and it ends up being a repair candidate.
So basically what you're saying, if it's a short-term deal, you're talking about at least 3 to 4 weeks. If it's a repair, we're talking about 4 to 6 months before he could hit back on the field. And you were saying how long without load-bearing?
Yeah, if you have a repair, typically it's 4 to 6 weeks of minimal weight-bearing or non-weight-bearing. Oh. So, you know, a repair, you have to let it heal. Again, the blood supply is not great in the meniscus, so it takes time to heal, and usually about 3 to 4 months before it's healed.
Doc, you had come on with Tommy, and we played the bite about Derek Carr and the oblique injury, and you determined you thought it'd probably be a 4-week injury to that oblique injury. There is some talk that quite possibly he will start throwing the football next week, which would be week 3 of the injury. But that still doesn't mean you can play because you got that torque from that oblique injury. You got to get that completely well before you can hit back on the field as a quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, he's just because he's starting, that's part of the rehab for him is getting out and throwing. And if you look at, you know, there's been a more oblique injuries this year in college and pros than you usually see. And most of them have been out roughly 4 to 6 weeks is an average. Now, that, again, depends on the extent of the injury and how much muscle's involved. And is it a mild tear, moderate tear, things like that.
Doc, we hadn't talked about this, but I'll just ask you. We've seen more this year, especially early in the season, with these soft tissue injuries, more and more of it. A lot of people in the game, outside the game, will bring up the fact that not being able to practice like you did in the past and getting your body ready for the real hits that happen during the regular season. This ain't preseason football. It's not the Jamboree game anymore, okay? It's the real NFL. Have you seen an uptick in that also, especially for the big men, offensive, defensive linemen? Man, there's been so many offensive linemen that have went down, and a lot of it is soft tissue injuries. And a lot of people are pointing back to the fact that, okay, the CBA was signed and it's a new agreement and they don't want them to get hurt on the field. But, you know, can you play a couple games and they down with a soft tissue injury to a knee, an ankle, you name it. And that has really dramatically jumped up this year. More than any other time, it's almost 40 years for me. I can't ever remember this many injuries this early in the season and all related to kind of soft tissue type injuries.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's hard to know. Every year we take care of different teams, and some year you see a lot of knee injuries, and some year you see a lot of shoulder injuries. I really think it's just kind of unlucky. You know, most of these athletes, you would think they have their bodies in the best shape going into the season. You know, yeah, you can't imitate live hitting in a real football game, but, you know, I would think most of these guys come into the season in shape, and, you know, there's been no, like, study or correlation to this, but it does seem like there's been a lot of injuries this year than when compared to the past.
Yeah, no question about it. And, again, I think the studies are not there because we just haven't had enough time to kind of see it over this gradual period of time with the new CBA and how they practice and everything else. But most of these guys come in very good shape. And so it's not about being in shape. It's just, man, this is a real physical game. You know, okay, a lot of people, you know, they went about that when they played in junior high school or high school. Man, it's a different deal when you get out there in the NFL. All of them are big, fast, strong, and something could snap real quick.
Yeah, I mean, there's you know, you can be in the best shape ever, and you take that eccentric contraction just the wrong way, and a tendon snaps from bone, you tear the muscle tendon junction. It is definitely common. And, you know, a lot of times I get asked, does the artificial turf make a difference in injuries? And I think it did early. Now I think people are more used to playing on turf. I think now the design of the turf has changed from what it was 10 years ago. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons to question why there's so many different injuries. But, you know, that's one of them for sure.
Doc, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Always appreciate your time. I know we're sort of short notice, so I appreciate your time and all your insights.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Doc. That was Dr. David Elias from Ortho-LA explaining to us about the meniscus and also about certainly the oblique injury that Derek Carr is fighting now. And long-term injuries, especially to the big men along the offensive line, we've seen that really dramatically jump this season. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this break. Finishing up here on our number one of sports talk on the Big 870, want to thank Glenn West from Go247.com covering the LSU Tigers, and also Dr. David Elias to explain us some of the medical situations that happens with a meniscus tear and also oblique injury. And also he threw in about all the soft tissue injuries that are happening across the National Football League. Let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to James in Metairie. James, in the huddle with Mike.
Hey, guys. You know, it's funny. I was just having a conversation about Derek's so-called best friend or friend, you know, Davante Adams, his former teammate, just got traded to the Jets. But all the while, he had a hamstring problem. Suddenly, that hamstring is no longer an issue now that he's been traded. You think we could have that same issue going on with Derek? Because I don't think I'm no doctor, but listen, I think if he got traded back to the Raiders, he would that situation will suddenly be cured.
But like James, nobody's going to eat that kind of money for Derek because now they've sort of extended that. And, you know, Derek's going to be on this roster next year, too, to redo that contract. So I've seen what you're talking about. I've had people ask me about it. Man, I don't see him getting traded back to the Raiders. I think the Raiders at this point, they're just trying to accumulate assets in the 2025 draft and try to get him a quarterback in the first round. Because if you hit, think about, I mean, the Commanders, they're not paying, they're paying Jaden Daniels, minimum wage money for a football player? The same thing with Caleb Williams. That's the beauty when you can get a guy. And listen, the Texans are going through the same thing with C.J. Stroud. Not paying him a ton of money either. When you hit on a draft choice, you know, you got kind of football minimum wage at this point. I think that's what the Raiders are most likely to do. And if they would make any deal, it would be to accumulate more draft assets. It's not about players.
Well, I would love for us to do the same thing. I like to get as many, top 100 picks. What is that, fourth round, something like that? As many top 100 picks as we can in Saints history, because our 30-year-olds are doing too much and we don't have enough 20-year-olds doing anything.
Well, there I agree, 100%.
Yeah.
Because you got a group, Deuce and I talked about this in the offseason. A big part of this season is about developing the younger players on your roster. The ones that can play. Okay, you can say you're young, but can they play? They're few and far between. James, that I think for a lot of fans, that is the most disheartening thing about, you know, you got younger guys and either they hurt or they haven't developed at all. And so you kind of stuck in football neutral or in football purgatory at this stage. And, man, I don't know how many players you could get, draft choice-wise, that would get you a second- or a third-round pick to accumulate assets. Same thing with the Raiders. Adams could do that. Max Crosby could do that. But it's not a handful of those type guys. James, thanks for the call. Appreciate it, buddy. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this news break.